Welcome to the Been There, Done That podcast with Angela Dunn Cartledge.
Hey there, it's Angela from Been There, Done That. If you're navigating the wild, unpredictable world of grief, I want to invite you to something special. It's called Messy Mornings, and it's our free weekly newsletter filled with real talk, gentle reminders, and support that actually meets you where you are. Each week, I'll send you stories, reflections, healing prompts straight to your inbox. No fluff, no pressure, just the space to release, feel, and heal. You don't have to do this alone. Head over to donethatpodcast.com and sign up for Messy Mornings. It's totally free, and it's made with you in mind. I've been there, and let's walk through this together.
Hi, everybody. This is the Been There, Done That podcast. I'm your host, Angela Dunn Cartledge, and I am here with my new friend, Hadassah Bauer, and I cannot wait to have this conversation. This is near and dear to both of our hearts, so I know that we will have a very wonderful, passionate, emotional conversation. I can't wait.
Thank you so much for having me. Well, like you said, I am your new adoption friend, and I am an adoptee. I am an adopted competent coach. I have been trained in trauma and many modalities. And my passion is to just help adoptees to stop telling their story and create a new one. And I love to help adoptees and even adoptive parents because they also need help with their children.
Yes, it's so true. And as my own story has evolved, we actually adopted our children as embryos. And so we have a slightly different story than a live birth adoption would look, but still part of that story is the giving up. Like you said, in someone's story, we've always tried to take a tact that we wanted them and someone else had something that we wanted. How do you coach your clients in that story rewriting?
Yes. So as adoptees, we have a big story. And I think anyone who has some kind of trauma in their life has a story. And statistics are coming out to say that 50% of the stories that we tell, we kind of fabricate as they go on. The longer we tell them, the more we add to them. And so by the end of our life, we've told the story to ourselves and others, and it's not all true. And so I love to help adoptees, first of all, tell their true story and let's get it out, but not ruminate on it. Because when we ruminate, we stay in that victim mentality. So I love to get the story out. And once it's out, let's heal it.
I love that. And I think there's so much, I don't know, not healing. I'm thinking the word that's coming to me is consistency. But what you are encouraging is this ability to tell the true story and then be able to, like you said, create a new one, but not continue to grow the bad story, not add to and create that branch and take that off on a tangent. How do you focus, I guess, on the details of the story? Everybody, of course, has individual nuance in their story that can be harder or less hard, or however that might look for each individual person. So let's take an example of your story. How do you work on your story on a consistent basis? Let me ask it that way.
Yes. And I think for many of us, it is a consistent basis. I do it every day. So when that thought comes up, and many of us adoptees have the same thought, we're unlovable, we're unwanted. And when those thoughts come up, is that really true? Is that the story I'm telling myself? Because we look at a situation such as adoption. And in my case, I was adopted at 3 months old. And so the story I told myself for many years was, my parents didn't love me. I'm an unlovable person. And therefore, they gave me up. And I have to live with this being unlovable the rest of my life. Now, let's separate the facts. And once we have facts, the facts were, my biological mother and father were very young and unmarried. Back in the 60s, when that was not done. And so the facts now that I can look at was they were not prepared to raise a child. And therefore, they gave me a great home with loving parents who wanted to take me in. And it had nothing to do with me personally. It had everything to do with them and their situation. So when I can look at the facts, number one, and stop creating a story that I'm telling myself, which was you're unlovable, you're unwanted, then we can create a new story based upon those facts.
I hear you saying things that I'm going to be able to apply to my children's lives and to be able to encourage them not to focus on that piece of it. How much of the rewriting of the story do you teach forgiveness? Where does that come into your coaching and teaching?
Absolutely. Forgiveness is a huge part of it. And it's not just forgiving birth parents, society. I mean, there's so many aspects of why a woman relinquishes. And of course, now, you know, for those of us trying to get information, I'm from an era called the adoptee swoop era. And that was from like end of World War II up until the mid 1970s. And we don't have original birth certificates. I have no health information. I can get absolutely zero information from my state because back in that time, adoptions were promised to be secret. And we all know where there's a lot of secrecy, there's shame. And so obviously, if I can't get my information, there's something wrong. It becomes this shame cycle almost within adoption. Luckily, that's changing a lot. States are starting to open up records where people can file to get records. But there's a lot of things that have to change within adoption itself legally in order for adoptees to feel that we have some agency in our own life and our own history of health and information that we deserve to have.
Absolutely. And you not just deserve, you were born into it, right? You were, that's part of the process of understanding who you are. And we do that for everybody else in our country. So I'm really thankful that things are shifting. I hate this, the stigma around it. That's the part that I hate the most because it is so limiting. It's just what you said about the shame and the guilt. How do you work with your clients on finding their biological parents, their genetic parents, I should say?
Right. So with some of my clients, they come to me and they're already in reunion and then having a difficult relationship and was totally unprepared for what reunion is going to look like. Some come before the search, and I would definitely suggest people to come before the search because not everyone who gets found wants to be found. And you have to be prepared for that rejection again. And it is super hard if you find a biological parent and they still want to be absent from your life. And so I would recommend always, let's start working on, you know, what you want out of this relationship and the realization and what are you going to do if they reject you again, if they don't want a relationship. because it's much easier going into the search knowing, okay, I'm okay knowing this, if I can just get this information and they don't want a relationship, to just really work out those details.
We're working on ourselves first.
Yes.
That is the key to being able to have that healthy reunion, no matter what it looks like. And that has been difficult for our particular story in that we are in a donation situation. So our domestic genetic mother donated her eggs and then did not want to have any further contact after that donation. So we have medical information up until a certain point, but then after that, we don't have any additional updates. And I know that there are ways that we can get that information. I mean, there's so many genetic testing situations out there now that you can have an unintended reunion, right? You can find out that you're related to somebody that you didn't mean to find out about. But I think there's so much beauty in that inner work, that work that we do on ourselves to get to the bottom of the fake stories, the false narratives that we tell each other and that we tell ourselves about who we are and what we are, that is so important. So I really resonate with that work, that inner work, to be able to know our worth before we take on that additional step. Where would you suggest someone? Let's say that someone comes to you and they've had an unintended reunion. Someone shows up at their door and says, "You're my sister." How would you coach them through that process?
Great question. excuse me. I feel that the best thing to do at that point is to take a pause. Because that's a shock that you weren't intending meeting that person. And to really decide what information you want, what kind of relationship, and make decisions before jumping in. Because once you jump in, it's hard to jump back out.
That's a great piece of advice. My goodness, you can't unsee it, right? You can't unexperience mm-hmm. what just happened. Someone knocked on your door and said, "I'm your daughter. I'm your son. I'm your brother." You can't undo that, right? So that's so great. That's fantastic advice to just take a moment and really, again, identify what you're looking for. That's what I'm hearing you say. What in your story do you wish you had known sooner?
I wish that I knew that my birth mother wanted me to find her. And for me, I did some looking at college age and then after I had my first daughter. But I come from a state where there's, you know, the files are all sealed and the birth mother has to come in and say, "I want contact." And then if you come in and say, "I want contact," they will get your information together. But she felt that she did not want to intrude in my life and that if I wanted to find her, I would. But unfortunately, by the time I found out who she was, she had already passed away. And I tried, like I said, through the state, didn't have any luck, put my DNA out there back in, I think, 2018, and no hits, nothing, but like a third cousin and couldn't come up with anything. And one of my children said, "Why don't you try one of the other DNA sites?" And I thought, okay, so I put my information out there on 23andMe, and within 30 days, I found a half-brother on my father's side and a half-sister on my mother's side. And it just opened up the doors. And after speaking with my sister, she said, "Our mother always hoped that she would meet you and that you would find us, and that she had told her about me when she was younger. I think she said about 16, 17, and then reminded her that I was still out there before she passed away from cancer. And so I, for me, that was the healing moment. I didn't have to meet her, though I am sad I didn't, but just knowing she wanted to meet me and hope that I had found her was the healing piece for me.
That's so amazing. And not everybody gets that.
No.
But I'm so thankful that you did get that for yourself and for your own children and family. There's things that you're passing on that came from her, whether you are able to know that or not, you know? That's beautiful. That's a really cool full circle moment.
It is. And like you said, the things you pass on, you know, that whole genetic mirroring where you can see yourself in another person, as an adoptee, we don't have that. And when I had my first daughter and she was born and she is a carbon copy of me, I just sat there and cried. It was, you know, the first time you're looking into the eyes of someone who looks like you. And for kept people, you know, non-adopted people, that's something you take for granted. You know, you walk like your dad, you smile like your mom, you laugh like your grandmother. We all hear the stories of the people who you are like. And we tell that amongst my seven children. Oh, your dad laughs just like that. But I never had that growing up. And when I had my first child and she looked just like me, it was just such an amazing moment for me.
It is so beautiful to hear you talk about your own story, but also to know that so many other people are in such a similar boat, and that you're so right that I never thought about my genetics being just part of who I was, that just was, because I could see it. I could see the people that fed into that. I could watch that happening.
And that helps with your identity. So as a young child, as you see your grandparents and your siblings and your parents, it helps forms your identity. When you're living in a world where no one looks like you, that's very hard. And I have not spoken to a single adoptee that has said that they didn't always look for someone who looked like them. We all think we're going to find somebody at a mall or a resort or somewhere on vacation and go, oh, that person looks like me. That's got to be a parent. It never happens. But as children, that's what you do. You spend your life looking for that one person that looks like you.
Especially if you grew up in the same town that you were adopted in, you know, exactly. And you're in your same area where you potentially could run into them. Mm-hmm. How would you coach someone that didn't know they were adopted until they were an adult or a late teenager, something later on in their life? How would you, what would be the first steps that you would want to take?
First of all, it's the identity shift. And I have seen that. It's almost harder because you have spent all these years creating this identity and now you don't know who you are. And they really have an identity crisis because they at this point have to kind of throw off who they thought they were and try to figure out who they are and who they want to be from this point forward. And it is very difficult. And that's why I tell adoptive parents, please tell your children that they're adopted. You know, even if it's a hard conversation, have it, because finding out as an adult, I know one person that found out in their 40s that they were adopted. And that's devastating. That is a whole lifetime of thinking you are related to this one person. And all of a sudden you find out you are not. And that's just too devastating for them.
Yeah, I can imagine the betrayal that you would feel would be intense. I remember early on in our story that friends and family members said, oh, you're going to tell the children that they're adopted? And yes, 100%. The last thing I want on my heart and conscience is that I held that information back from them. They were not sure of something. And I confirmed that by saying, oh yeah, I held this back from you for all these years. I didn't want that to be my responsibility. So it was more important to me to have multiple hard conversations than it was to have none and take a chance. And what would have happened if something had happened to me and that information didn't get to them in time or, you know, whatever. I just, it was too much. So I just didn't want that responsibility on my own heart and conscience. So I'm glad that you gave that advice because I followed it. Yes. I followed it without knowing it, but it is a hard conversation to have, knowing what I feel and what I know, that I have to have that conversation in front of them with doctors. Does anybody in your family have cancer? That's a great question, but it is not applicable to our family situation because we adopted them as embryos. We don't have that situation. We don't even know a lot of that medical information. Is there a such thing anymore as closed adoption?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Very much so.
And I might be calling it the wrong thing. So forgive me if I'm calling it something that isn't as correct as it used to be.
No, that's fine. And even open adoptions aren't always open. They are sometimes billed as being open, but there's no legal ramification for the adoptive parents to sever contact with the birth mother. And so a lot of birth mothers are told, we'll do an open adoption with you. But a year or two down the line, the adoptive parents move away or they just sever contact. And the birth mother has no legal ramification to regain contact with the child.
Wow. That would be heartbreaking.
Yes.
I can't imagine what that would feel like. We have an open adoption with the genetic father. Like I said, because the was a donation. That's a different relationship. We have no idea where she is. But that would be, I can't imagine how heartbreaking that would be. But again, there's so many pieces of this that is heartbreaking that I don't want to take away from any of the other pieces of the story.
Usually parents who come in and want to adopt have some kind of loss, either fertility. And I would also help them learn about adoption trauma, because if you are an informed parent and you understand that even if you get an embryo, your child will have some kind of trauma because of the adoption and just not having the biological, like I said, maybe genetic mirroring or whatever it may be, there will be some loss. And all adoption begins with loss. Either, you know, the adoptive parents, they can't have their own biological child. That's a loss. And if they don't deal with that loss first, they're never going to be able to help their child deal with the losses of adoption. And so I would help adoptive parents do that. I will help them learn about adoption trauma and how to approach raising their child so that their child will be a healthy adoptee.
I knew, of course, that my own story had trauma in it of my own.
Right.
But it didn't occur to me that there would be a trauma on the children's side because I carried them, because they were birthed out of me. But there's still a disconnection, right? There's still that disconnection from the genetic parents. That's very interesting. Wow.
Right. But your child or your children, because you carried them, will actually have less trauma than somebody who was adopted and carried by someone else. Because we all know that when mom is carrying that baby, the baby and the mom are bonding. And that baby, when it's born, already knows its mother's heart rate, the respirations, and her voice. And so the babies are bonding with you in utero. And when you take that baby away and go hand them over to a stranger in adoption, then that's like, that's the very first rejection or trauma that that child gets. So your children are lucky that they didn't receive that initial being separated from their birth mother who bonded with them for 9 months.
Yeah, it is. I always struggle with how to verbalize who is who in our story, because legally, because I birthed them, I'm the biological mother, but I'm not genetically related to them in any way. But there are so many situations where our children will act like us, and they did it very, very early, even as babies, that we laugh about the fact that because we were with them all through the pregnancy, and then, of course, right after they were born, that there were things that they got that they wouldn't have gotten had they not been born out of my body. It is so fascinating to me, the whole process and concept of what we're doing in mothering and fathering and parenting, and this whole piece of trauma. I just see so much beauty in the healing that you are doing with your clients, and with I know that the audience will gain so much knowledge from you. How can we work with Hadassah? How can we find you? How can we connect with you and just continue to gain that healing?
I'm on all social media. I am on Instagram, Facebook. I have a website, HadassahBauer.com. I have courses that I do. You can work with me one-on-one. I have free information on my website and in my social media. I always put something free out there as far as like, a little worksheet or journaling. I am a big fan of journaling, so much so that I have a journal on Amazon that you can purchase. And it is just written for adoptees by an adoptee. And my favorite journal prompts that I use and give to my clients. So there's lots of ways that you can work with me, but find me on social media, Facebook. I put a lot of free stuff. It's easier on Facebook, but on my website also, HadassahBauer.com.
I love it. And I'm so thankful for our time together, because I just know that there's so much healing and information that our audience will be able to glean from this.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for putting the word out about adoption and healing. And we need to be those voices. Thank you.